Ladies and gentlemen, I learned in Dundee 30 years ago never to follow George talking. I'm really nasty flu, so I might not have much voice, and I will ramble rather more than usual, I'm afraid. You know, when you feel sick, you are conscious of your own mortality. I have a religious faith, personally. It's sometimes tested. It's very tested at the moment. It's very difficult to believe in a just God when Peter Osgood and Robin Cook and George Best are all dead, and Tony Blair and Silvio Berlusconi and David Rose are wandering around. I'm sure many of you are great fans and supporters of our Prime Minister. I'm not sure if you saw him a couple of days ago on television explaining to us why concern for civil liberties and human rights was old-fashioned, is now a more modern agenda. Now he was proud of the transformation of New Labour. And he said this, I will quote him. He said, "No one can ever say about me the things they used to say about Clement Attlee and Harold Wilson." Well, I can't remember anyone ever calling Harold Wilson or Clement Attlee a power-crazed war criminal, for example. And Tony Blair is a war criminal. Absolutely. To launch a war of aggression, an illegal war of aggression, is a war crime. It's the worst war crime of all. It was an illegal war. We knew it was an illegal war. We didn't get sanctioned from the United Nations Security Council. I was party to and saw the diplomatic telegram in which we discussed the fact that as we weren't going to get approval from the Security Council, as we knew, in fact, we would lose a vote at the Security Council, we would go ahead without it. It was knowingly an illegal war. That is the worst war crime of all. And there's another very important principle here. Who blew up the mosque in Somalia? Well, it's hard to be certain. But one thing we do know is that the responsibility lies with George Bush and with Tony Blair. And I don't just say that in a moral sense, I say it in a legal sense. Because an important principle established at Nuremberg, which is an accepted principle of international law, is that when you launch an illegal war of aggression, you are a war criminal, and you are responsible not just for launching the war, but you take on yourself the legal culpability for all the war crimes committed in the course of the war which was launched by any party. We can no longer claim we're in Iraq to find WMD. We gave up claiming that some years ago. We can no longer claim that we're there to bring democracy and peace. At the moment, I think our claim has come down to one of being there to stop the civil war we started getting any worse. And shortly, we're going to be there just to guard the graves. What we're really there for, of course, is to guard the newly privatised oil contracts. I was the ambassador in Uzbekistan. In Uzbekistan, we were giving enormous amounts of political support. The Americans were giving military support. And in 2002 alone, over $500 million in aid to one of the worst governments on earth. Government where there are no freedoms of any kind. Well, there's no political freedom, no religious freedom, no freedom of expression, no free media, no freedom of assembly, where all the opposition parties are banned, and where thousands of people are tortured in gulags every year, and where the bulk of the population work as slaves in the cotton industry. But that was okay, because Mr. Karimov was one of our allies, a member of the Coalition of the Willing, along with the Marshall Islands, one of the only countries to have a 100% record of voting with the United States in the United Nations. I sat there in astonishment in March of 2003 As we went to war, I heard all these brave words, men going to war, to dismantle the torture chambers, to remove the rape rooms, when we were funding torture chambers and rape rooms in Uzbekistan. And when I knew for certain, because I'd protested against it, I'd been told off for protesting against it, I'd been brought back to meetings in London, where I had it spelt out to me very clearly, that we had taken a policy decision that the United Kingdom would obtain intelligence from torture. And that torture, in every single case I came across, was always torture of Muslims. This was part of the general trend that the human rights of Muslims do not count. And it's also part of the general trend of appropriating the world's resources of oil and gas. Why were we supporting Karimov? Well, in 1997, George Bush held a meeting while he was governor of Texas with the Uzbek ambassador and with Kenneth Lay of Enron, where they put together a $2 billion contract for Enron to exploit the gas resources of Uzbekistan. Enron, of course, went belly up. So there's occasionally some justice in the world. And while I was there, other American companies were chasing the oil and gas. And in Uzbekistan, American needs, American attempts to appropriate the oil and gas reserves of the world were best served by supporting the dictator. Those same oil and gas needs were best served in Iraq by removing the dictator. If you try to explain American policy in terms of democracy and human rights, it makes no sense whatsoever. If you attempt to explain American policy in terms of exploiting and getting hold of oil and gas, it is perfectly consistent. And now we are asked to look forward to doing the same thing to Iran, because Iran has nuclear weapons. Has anyone ever heard Jack Straw say anything about Israel's nuclear weapons?
Absolutely not.
Why are we not threatening to go to war with India and Pakistan, who have nuclear weapons? Even the CIA admits that if Iran wants to develop nuclear weapons, if they're 12 years away from succeeding in doing it. Why is that a cause for war now? And yet we are seeing the same cheerleaders in the media writing articles now telling us that war with Iran is inevitable and we must prepare ourselves for it. We have a government of arrogance. We have a government which spends its time removing civil liberties by the handful. 5 years ago, nobody would have believed me if I'd said to them, do you know the British government will be arguing before the House of Lords for the right to use evidence obtained through torture? Who would believe our country could come to that? Who would believe we'd be locking up Muslims for years and years and years without charge, without trial, without even being told why they are being held? There are so many little incidents. Let me tell you just one. On Thursday the 9th of March, you can see Michael Winterbottom's film, The Road to Guantanamo, premiering on Channel 4. It won the Silver Beer at the Berlin Film Festival. On their way back from the Berlin Film Festival, the actors who played the lead roles were picked up by special branch at the airport, were questioned for 6 hours, and asked if they were going to make any political films in the future, asked whether they intended to make more films about Islam, and asked about the personal politics of Michael Winterbottom. What kind of country are we turning into? You know, I honestly believe that we are being started by Blair and his minions along a path that leads, if you take together the whipping up of Islamophobia across the entire mainstream media, we take together the many, many aversions on our civil liberties, we are being led on a path that leads the way to fascism. We have to stop. I don't believe it is hopeless. I do believe the majority of the people are with us. I do believe we have a lot of work to do to waken them up to exactly what is happening. But I will say this to you. Where fascism starts, there is an absolute duty to stop it, to fight it. And even if it were completely hopeless, we have to stand and be counted now. And we have to make sure that we and everyone we know is out there on that demonstration. Thank you.